it's nice to have goals, but how are you going to get to that place? It's, you know, you can put the goal on, you know, on a pegboard saying, I want to be a millionaire, but how are you going to get there? That's important.
Welcome to The Art of Fatherhood, a podcast that takes you on the journey of fatherhood. Now here's your host, Art Eddy.
What's going on, everybody? Another edition of the Art of Fatherhood podcast. I'm very happy to have Lucas Turnbloom. Thanks for taking the time to chat with me, sir. Great to chat with you again.
Hey, it's great to be back. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, man. Love bringing good guys like yourself who are good dads, but also who are creative as heck. You got a new book out, Steve-O McKeevil. We're going to talk about that in a second. But of course, let's talk about your fatherhood journey. We're kind of like in the green room, so to speak. We're talking about just our kids are in the same age ranges and how, man, we got to kind of, you know, not that we're helicopter parents, but we got to let them kind of kick them out of the nest a little bit and let them do some more. But take me back when you found out you were going to be a dad, Lucas. What was going through your mind?
Oh, wow. It was, we had just purchased a condo here in Southern California, and it was very, very quick. My wife and I had just come back from Hawaii, and then, you know, a couple months later, she's like, hey, guess what? I'm like, what? And everything changed. And it was you know, the feelings of joy, of fear, of, you know, immediately fast forwarding 30 years, like, what, where am I going to be? How am I going to do this? And then, you know, and then you kind of catch your bearings. And then 9 months later, then you realize all those emotions come back times 10 and you're like, oh, what am I doing? But yeah, so I mean, we had just, it was a whole new bunch of things that were happening. And then this, and then that happened too. And it was like, wow, life comes at you real fast, you know?
No doubt, little Ferris Bueller words of wisdom right there. I love it. And you know, it's too, when we talk about your book too, I mean, you and I are both geeks at heart. And like the subtle, like, you know, just fandoms that you put in there and through your book are fantastic. I'm like chuckling to myself. And it's just, I love that. And so, one of the things I think I know that you're probably going to teach your kids is creativity and just having fun. What are some of the other values or things you're looking to instill into them?
Wow. Strong work ethic is a real big thing we're doing right now because, you know, obviously with the pandemic and everything, we've been seeing help wanted signs everywhere. And I'm just trying to teach, you know, my kids, you know, if you want something, you got to work hard for it. You know, you may not want to do this job over here at McDonald's, but this will take you to this place and this will take you to this place. And another thing is about the difference between a goal and figuring out how to get to that goal. It's nice to have goals, but how are you going to get to that place? It's, you know, you can put the goal on, you know, on a pegboard saying, I want to be a millionaire, but how are you going to get there? That's important. You got to learn the skills to get you different places so that you can get to that place. So we've been doing that a lot lately. My oldest is just going into high school. So a lot of those kinds of questions are coming up. So I'm trying to do my best in guiding him in that way. And I'm finding, wow, I got to do a lot of research. it's no more just off the cuff advice. I got to give him some real advice. So I've been doing a lot of that.
You know, it's funny because you just mentioned jobs and all that good stuff. And yeah, because we're in the same boat too, where you're kind of like, all right, where are we going with it? Like, you know, for your kids, like, how do we teach them certain things? And someone that's in your field, Dustin Hansen, I had him on a few months ago, and we were talking about how he's like, you know, I'm going to ask you a second about like a dad hack or a piece of advice you'd offer to maybe not just new dads, but dads in general. But before I get into that, he was talking about get job applications for your kids before they turn the age of, you know, before they start doing that, because they fill it out, they can ask you questions or certain things that, hey, maybe I should learn this skill if I want to go into, like, maybe not that, when I say profession, but in that line of work, you know, as a teenager, right? And I thought that was really cool because there are certain things, like, I don't even go back to, like, preschool. Like, I remember when my daughter's from preschool, they're like, you know, certain things like teaching them how to tie their shoes instead of buying, you know, going the cheap way out and just using Velcro, or telling them, like, teaching them how to use scissors, right? All of these things that, you know, I know there's a bunch of dad books. Heck, me and John Finkel wrote a dad book together. But like, there's a lot of things where a kid doesn't come with instructions, right? And so you have those moments where you're like, if I could do that again, I would have done X, Y, and Z. And so I think this is why I love when the fact that new dads reach out, you know, like, hey, listen to your podcast and your guests had great pieces of advice, or I love what they're thinking about fatherhood. But like, I just want to piggyback on what you said. Like, it's just so crazy. Like, all of these things, you're like, I have to unlearn what I've learned, almost like Yoda, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, like you were mentioning tying shoes. I learned how to tie my shoes, I won't say backwards, but my mother was left-handed. So she taught me left-handed. So I tie my shoes. When people see it, they say, you're doing it. Why are you doing it backwards? You're right-handed. And so I had to unlearn that to teach my oldest how to tie his shoes when he started tying his shoes. So it's like you said, you have to unlearn certain things along the way that you never thought in a million years that you'd have to, you know, like, well, I've been doing this way for, you know, God knows how long, but now I got to figure out a new way. So, and it's amazing too, just especially in the last 10 years, the amount of information that we have access to that, you know, there's all these other, you know, problems that would come up during the day. You're like, I don't know how to answer that. Hold on, son. And I go into the garage and grab my phone and I'm just, and I find a few different answers, kind of just think, okay, how do I need to explain this? And then I come back. So I think for a lot of new dads, that's really cool. I mean, when I first, my son was born in the mid 2000s, you know, iPhones didn't even exist. I mean, it was just the flip phone. And then, you know, so it would take a little bit of an effort to go over to the computer, turn it on and look something up real quick. Whereas now it's, you know, got the information at your fingertips. So I think that that's really, really something special for new dads.
I totally agree with that. And I think this goes right into the next question is like, talk about something your kids have taught you either about yourself or about life that maybe you knew was kind of in the works, but like once, you know, you had kids, it's like they brought it out to the forefront.
Wow. Okay. There's a couple of things. One, and this is the most important, and most new dads don't really get this right away. You do not need 10 to 12 hours of sleep. You can get by on 4 hours of sleep. Now it's not ideal, but you absolutely can. And I mean, when you tell younger teenagers that, or when you tell people in their 20s, they kind of look at you like, I need rest. It's like, no, you'll figure it out. Your body will figure it out. And you've got so much going on during the day that you may be tired, but there'll be other things, you know, that kind of distract you from that. And that's going to be kind of lame, but that's like my big one that I go to, you know, it's, you don't need that much sleep.
Yeah. Kind of going along with that. Like, what is like a dad hack? Like, you know, for me, I was like, when we would go on car trips or something, I would take like solo cups and just put snacks in there, because it'd be like, right, it'd be perfect for their, you know, their seats, their car seats, because you'd put it in there. And it's not like, instead of you give them a bag, like I can't open it up, like if you're on a car trip or something. So I always put like solo cups with some Goldfish, whatever the case may be. It's like, all right, it's in there. It's, they don't have to like pick up the whole thing. They can just pick up the treat or snack or whatever. Do you have like a dad hack?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, to piggyback on the snacks thing, I am always constantly packing something, no matter where we're going, even if it's just down the street to the 7-Eleven, you know, I'll put like a small baggie of Goldfish, some, you know, either in my bag or my pocket, because not so much anymore. I mean, they're older now, but I mean, you never knew when it was. And then I would always put a small thing of baby wipes in my back pocket to clean a table, to clean hands. I mean, I use that for myself too. It's like, oh yeah. But, and that was one of the other things that I think that I really figured out quickly about myself that I had never known before, was I was a germaphobe. And once the kids like Chuck E. Cheese, I'm like, I mean, back in the day I'd go in there and it was no big thing. But then when I had kids, I walk in there, I'm like, oh no, you're not touching that. And I'd have to wipe it down real quick before they play a video game, and I'd follow them around. Like, you know, speaking of helicopter parents, I was for a little while with the germs, because, and I think the main reason for that was, is my oldest one, he got sick all the time. And it was just, I'm just trying to fight the germs and the disease. And so that was, I would always put baby wipes in my back pocket. The older they got, I put a thing of hand sanitizer in my little change pocket in my jeans. And, oh, I remember the other thing that I was going to say a few minutes ago, patience.
Okay. Yes.
They taught me patience. That's absolutely, I mean, I was not an impatient person beforehand, but I didn't truly understand the nature of patience. When you have a child, I mean, it's, you can't really describe it. It's just that there becomes a time where you're like, okay, all right, well, if we're not going to do this today, we'll do it tomorrow. You know, if we're not going to do it tomorrow, we'll do it next week. There's one thing that they really brought out in me, was understanding patience. So sorry to circle back to that, but it just clicked. I'm like, I knew I had another one. So,
And you know, it's like they always say, like the mom brain. There's a dad brain that creeps in there too, right? So like, I totally get that, man. I appreciate you circling back with that. I think you know, you and I first crossed paths with your book Dream Jumper, and to this day, like it's in my office. My kids, you know, hanging out. They're like, they'll pick it up and just read it again, right? It's like
awesome.
It's really cool, and obviously it was a sequel to that too. But now I got a new book, Stephen McEvil. Congrats on that.
Thank you. I got
the chance to check it out. Love the geek Easter eggs you have in there, whether it's a reference to Star Wars or heck, even if the dad looks like a certain someone I'm talking to right now. I love it. Talk a little bit about the book and the inspiration for it, sir.
Wow. Okay. So I'm going to try to condense this down. I actually wrote this story in 2009-ish, before Dream Jumper. But a series of events happened where it kind of got shelved. And my agent always said, she's like, we can come back to this. Don't worry. Focus on these other things. So I had a bit of a break after the last Dream Jumper book. And I talked to my agent. I said, what do you think? And it had gone, originally started out as prose. It was very much like Diary of a Wimpy Kid. It was a 300-page book, very much story, illustrated joke, story, illustrated joke. But the market had changed. And my agent said, well, you've already done 2 graphic novels. Let's do a third. And I said, okay. So we worked on it. I changed the story a little bit. It's now 200 some pages instead of 300. And then she took it to Random House, and Crown is the division of Random House, and they bought it. And we have, and I don't even know if I've said this yet. I don't even know if they've announced it yet, but they have 3 books coming out. So I'm super excited.
Man, that's awesome. Trilogy.
Yeah, it's a trilogy. I'm actually writing book 3, you know, just before this, and and editing down book 2 notes. So working on 2 books at once, it's interesting. But yeah, it's cool.
Little like Lord of the Rings right there, right? You're making them as you like together.
Yeah, right? Absolutely. Yeah. Like I said, I wrote it back in 2009, and it's just the story of a kid supervillain trying to find his way in the world because he descends from these supervillains, his entire family legacy going back to ancient Greece or whatever, which actually becomes very important in book 2, by the way. Those who have already read it, there's a funny scene in book 2 that's kind of jumps back to book 1. So look for that. That'll be cool.
I'm glad that, you know, obviously your project is, okay, 2022, right? So from 2009 to 2022, you were just waiting on that. I mean, hey, your kids helped you out with that patience right there, right?
Oh, absolutely. And what they did, and I don't want to spoil it for anybody who hasn't read it, but, and I've got a copy right here. There's a scene in the middle where there's a bunch of supervillains and they all come together. They actually, what I asked them to do, because I really wanted them to be involved in the book.
Nice.
They developed a series of supervillain designs for me. So what they did was each of them gave me like 10, 15 different designs. I put them in a book, then I kept them. And then I went back to them and I drew them in my style and added them to that scene. So a lot of those supervillains in the background are theirs. So, and I actually, it was funny too, because I'd asked my colorist, I said, hey, do your kids want to give some stuff in there? And I think it kind of fell through the cracks, but I was like, oh, that would have been so cool to have his kids and my kids. But yeah, they did that. And then they did a lot of feedback. I didn't let them read the whole book before it was published. The first time they ever read it from beginning to end was a couple weeks ago, but they did go over story notes. I said, is this funny? Do I lose this? I mean, do I increase this part? And they were very, very helpful in that, especially now that they're older. But they still have that kid sensibility, but they're able to tell me more of in an honest way, which is really cool.
That's fantastic. So, I mean, a couple more questions that kind of just popped in my head with you saying that. So when you're writing in 2009, was it just the first book? Almost kind of like a George Lucas where like there was different iterations, right? And then after this one came out and they're like, all right, we're going to greenlit it to be a trilogy. Did you like elongate the first story and just like kind of cut them up, or is it like, all right, you gave them the whole first story and now like, all right, we want 2 more, so now you got to come up with the other 2? I mean, I know you're working on the 2 right now, but was it only the first one and then obviously like, all right, now I got to make 2 and 3?
Yeah, what it actually changed quite a bit, because what the first book was it was very much like Diary of a Wimpy Kid in the sense that it went over the entire school year, whereas this book doesn't do that. And this focused a lot more on the ins and outs of him trying to survive his family and school. And that's kind of what it was really about. Whereas this is more, it kind of morphed into an adventure fantasy type thing. But what I ended up doing was I took a lot of the the really funny points from that original draft and kind of sprinkled them in book one, sprinkled them in number two, and in number three. So book one kind of was a lot of these three books. I mean, so it was at that time in 2009, I had an idea of where I wanted it to go, but it wasn't so much in the sense of what it is now, if that makes sense. It was more of a one and all, whereas this series now, I mean, once book three happens, I can actually keep going. That's how I want it to be. As of right now, it's a complete trilogy, and I know the beginning and the end, and I knew that when I started this iteration, but I also know where I can take books 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and so on. So it's really fun writing stories. And Dream Jumper was the same way. When I wrote Dream Jumper with Greg, it was like we started at the end and we worked our way backwards. So we knew where it was going to go. And eventually Dream Jumper 3 will happen. And people, every day, where's Dream Jumper 3? It's going to happen. I promise it will happen. But we know where it's going to end. So, I mean, there's a complete story arc there. And that's often how I write in nowadays. But when this first started, it was basically just a one and done. Okay. So
cool, man. Just in regards to, you know, Dream Jumper and, of course, Stephen McKeeble, and I love the fact that, you reached out, you told your kids like, hey, do some villain designs. And that's something that not only when you have books out there, it's something that you leave as a legacy, but your kids will have like, hey, I helped, my dad, create this book. So I love that. And again, now that we're kind of in a new sort of world where I wouldn't say getting back to normal, but before the pandemic, I know you did conventions and stuff. Did your kids used to go to conventions with you?
Yeah, the big one we went to is San Diego Comic-Con, because it's right here.
Yeah.
And because I've been in the pro circuit for over 10 years, I get a badge every year.
Nice.
So the last time I went was 2019. Because they didn't have 2020. And then I think they had those weird mini San Diego Comic-Cons in the late fall. And I didn't go to that. I don't know many people that went to that. But yeah, we would go. Yeah, almost every year. They didn't go the last couple of years because it got so overwhelming. The crowds that just they weren't enjoying themselves. But now they kind of got that itch that they want to go back. And it's like, oh, I don't know if daddy can get tickets this late in the season. We'll see. I don't know. But so the con ticket or the con scene is kind of trying to pick back up. And actually, Random House just sent me a thing and saying you're on 5 panels. And I'm like, oh, I guess I got to go all 5 days then, right? And they're like, yeah. It's like, oh. I don't know. That's not dipping the toe in the water. That's going full cannonball right back into the thing, you know? I mean, I don't know if I'm ready for, I was good with going 1, maybe 2 days, but 5 days? Oh, yeah. So, but I'd love to get out to New York. I'd love to get to all of the library conventions. I mean, those are really cool. I've been to the Book Expo, which I don't think exists anymore, was super, super cool. And I hope they bring it back, because I went to that one time and that was amazing. That was the best fun at a con I've ever had. So
is it like a certain location, or did they go to different places each year?
The ALA, I think is in DC every year. They have one in Texas. They've got one in Northern California. And then the Book Expo, the one time I went, it was in Anaheim. I don't know why it was in Anaheim, but usually it's in New York. That's my understanding. But when COVID happened, they said, no, that's it. We're done. And I think the website still says we're working on it, but it's like 3 years later. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know if they're ever coming back, but the Book Expo was, I don't know what it was about that con, but it was just amazing. It was my favorite one. And actually, I take that back. I know what it was, because I sat in the green room because I illustrated a book and they wanted us to come out and sign it. And I was back there with Jamie Lee Curtis, Kevin Nealon from Saturday Night Live, and Ernest Borgnine.
Oh, from Airwolf. Well, I know him from Airwolf, right?
But I was asking him SpongeBob questions. Oh, we were all just kind of sitting there. Yes. And it was just, I'm like, because I'm like, Jamie Lee Curtis is right here. But I'm like, I want to ask, I want to go over here to Ernest Borgnine and talk to him about SpongeBob. But we were only back there for a few minutes. But that was really, really cool. And so anyway, I missed the Book Expo. I hope it comes back.
What an eclectic group of people, and also with their careers, like all, like, you mentioned SpongeBob for Ernest Borgnine. Like, I went right to Airwolf. But, Kevin Nealon, obviously on Live, then some movies playing some different roles. Jamie Lee Curtis, obviously humor comedy, then of course horror with Halloween. That right? is fantastic. Nice.
Man. Yeah. They all had books that year. And so they were all there for their publishers. Just, there was like this big green room, kind of like in the middle of the thing that was, you wouldn't even notice it. It just looks like when you go to a comic convention, you see these curtains that are up and but theirs was right in the middle. And we were all kind of sitting there, and it was just because their publishers had just put them there, and they were all waiting to go out to do their signings. But I just remember it was like this is the strangest thing. Jamie Lee Curtis, Kevin Nealon, Ernest Borgnine. It was bizarre, you know. And then when we were on our way out, there was some like reality stars doing their book. I mean, it was just such an interesting convention, and I really miss it. I really, really hope they bring it back.
Just from like a pop culture, just like, hey, pick three random actors that have like, you know, definitely an imprint in, you know, pop culture. And like, just like the more random, the better. Like those are the best, like that's like the best selection you can have. I love it.
You know, it's weird too, because my friends, whenever I go to a convention, there's always this weird joke that I will run into a celebrity regardless of the day or the time or where. And it's always true. Like the last comic convention I went to, I made a promise to everybody when it first started. I said, I'm going to run into Nathan Fillion at some time during this con. It's going to happen. And sure enough, we were outside. I was sitting in a hotel drawing, waiting between panels. He walks right past the hotel between two buildings. Nobody even sees him. I walk out behind him. I'm like, I'm going to get a selfie. And so I'm waiting, and he's with his brother and some other guy. And they stop in front of the giant billboard of The Rookie, which is the show he's working, you know, he's on right now. And it's on the side of I think it's Petco Park. So it's huge. And he's standing there behind it, taking a selfie of himself. And I, nobody's even paying attention. I'm just kind of standing there like, and when he's done, I'm like, can I take a picture? And he's like, oh yeah, yeah, come on over here. So I'm like, yeah, that was really cool. And then, but I mean, John Landis, I mean, Joss Whedon before his problems, he walked right past. I'm like, hey, let's take a picture. You know, it never fails. So if you ever see me at a comic convention, you're going to run into a celebrity shortly thereafter or right before, because it never fails. So
nice. If I've met Nathan, like, hey, can we just do the video of us doing the whole like gift like that? I would love to do that with it, right?
That's right.
Love it, man. One more question before we finish off with the Fatherhood Quick Five. And again, I appreciate you being gracious with your time. Talk a little bit about, like, I mean, right now you're working on books 2 and 3. So I guess your creative process is right now in full swing, focus on those books. But for you, I'm just guessing, like, with your creativity and, you know, how you probably look at the world and, oh, maybe I could work on something like that. Like, is it tough to shut your creative brain? Like, let's just say you're not having a deadlines and projects, because right now you're like, all right, I got deadlines I need to meet, right? But like, when you maybe don't have deadlines, is it like tough to take your creative brain and like just set it down and put it on pause?
Yeah, you know, obviously everybody's suffering from the pandemic. These last couple of years have been odd for me. In a sense that I usually have like work patterns. I'll be like, okay, I'm going to be creative this time. And then after that, I got to go off the clock and do the father thing and make sure that I do it right. And because it's important. But what happened these last 2 years is I had also got laid off, like so many people, around the country and around the world. And it was a weird process for me, because I had been working steadily since I was 16. And, you know, I'm in my early 40s now, and it was such a weird mental thing for me to try to have to kind of put that aside while being creative, while being a good father and husband. And that was very, very hard. It took me a long time to figure out how to do that. I kind of just, it meant a lot of after they went to sleep, just a lot of me just kind of processing the entire thing. And then, but they didn't even realize it. I mean, until I think it was like 6 months after the fact, they were like, What? And I'm like, yeah, no, it's fine. You know, the comics, graphic novel thing, that's my career now. So it's not even an issue. And like, we had no idea. I said, yeah, I know. I kind of hit it well. But personally, navigating that, I guess, first year of the pandemic was just a process. But you gotta just do it. You gotta be the father that they need. And you gotta make sure that you're the best, you know, provider you can be, and not. My biggest worry was I didn't want to put my anxieties on them. It was already unprecedented. Everything's shut down. They're stuck at home. They can't go to school. We can't go to the store. You know, we're worried about going through a drive-through to get food. So they didn't need another point of anxiety. So that was tough trying to figure that out. But I got over it, and I think everybody's better for it. And like I said, they didn't even know about it for the first 6 months. So I guess I hit it pretty well.
Yeah.
But yeah, so anyway. Yeah, so there's definitely, I mean, I took a tangent there, but there's definitely a time to be creative for me and a time to be the dad. One of the things I know about when I was trying to figure out when I was doing comics early on is I would always have this thing in my brain where, oh, you got to let the creativity hit you. When you're getting paid, you got to, okay, this is creative time, whether it's there or not, you got to figure it out. And then if you spend a whole day just creating nothing but garbage, you can come back to it in a week. And I don't know, it's when you're getting paid for it, it's, you got to be creative at a specific time. And then once that time's over, you got to move on. So,
yeah, it's almost like I was like, we're kind of in the green room talking about like old school movies. And so I was like, make me a bicycle clown, like dance, you know, dad, come on, be funny, right?
Yeah.
Love it, man. Thanks again for sharing not just fatherhood and not Stephen McEvil, but just like, you know, just your creative process. Cause I really appreciate your artwork and what you do in this community. So thank you very much. And now we're gonna finish off
with thank you.
Quick five. Yeah, no doubt, man. And again, you know, age ranges I think are perfect for this one. Like favorite family movie, what is it right now? Currently. I know it probably switches, but like what are you guys digging right now?
Currently, right now, favorite family movie is Episode 4 Star Wars. The original. And nice. That's all the kids, not me. They put that on almost every day.
Nice, love it. Just a side note, what do you guys think of Kenobi?
Whoa, how much time do you have? It's I have my biggest issue with it is I feel like they've had all this time and the story just doesn't feel, it feels like they've missed something. It feels like when a year and a half ago they said we're tossing this out and we're starting over, I'm like, okay, they're having some problems behind the scenes. And it's here. I'm hoping that these last two episodes just really kick butt and kind of give I'm not so much on the horse of, they're bending canon. I like Vader and Kenobi and I just want them. And, you know, I've never, the Grand Inquisitor, I've never really cared about him. I never cared about the other Inquisitors. I mean, they just feel like fancy stormtroopers. It's like, whatever, you know,
yeah.
But I just hope that the story really picks up at the end. So.
No, I get you. I mean, you know, this man being on social media, you just see like, there is like some, and what I you just said, I think was fair and just in out and open and honest. I appreciate that. You just see a lot of toxic, you know, fans. You're just like, all right, if you don't like it, you don't have to like scream to the mountaintops why you don't like certain something. But like, I agree. Like what you said, where there's something missing. Like it's tough because these two characters, Obi-Wan and Darth and Vader, where you're just like, you know, like those are such important characters, and you wanted to know. Like, The very first episode where you just see him being like, what am I doing with my life? It was almost like, you know, especially with you, like hiding it from, you know, your kids for 6 months. Like, what am I doing? Like anybody can kind of realize, like, where's my place now? Like, what am I doing? Right. And so I appreciated the humbleness. I do love like, now I'm going on a tangent, Loki at the end. Everyone really didn't like the last episode, but I love, you know, whether you think it's spoiler. Have you seen Loki?
I have not. Not seen Loki.
I'm going to shut up then. But like, I liked the last episode. liked the last episode because it was great dialogue. And if you like the character Loki, and if you like all these things, it was just perfect. And I think that, you know, some people are upset, like, oh, it's not wash, rinse, repeat. But then when it becomes wash, rinse, and repeat, like, I was a big fan of The Walking Dead, and all of a sudden I'm like, okay, this season is just like the other seasons. I think I'm kind of done. And I honestly saw something on Twitter being like, oh, the, you know, season blah, blah, of Walking Dead. I'm like, that's still on? So I was like, so it's funny how there's certain shows that you're like, that you care so much about that you're going to stick with. And the other show is like, I'm done. All right, my tangent's done.
I will say, though, when it comes to Star Wars, you can't see it, but I've got Star Wars posters you just can't see it. They're everywhere. I mean, the only thing you see here is this bookshelf, but everything else is Star Wars. I love Star Wars. And when I talk about not liking something about Star Wars, I usually approach it from a writer's standpoint. Yeah. I will watch, I adore Star Wars. Even if I have a problem with it, I will still watch it. I love the sequels. I love The Mandalorian, Boba Fett. I even love Kenobi. I have issues with the way that they've done things in terms of writing. But I mean, other than that, I mean, I don't understand. Like you were saying, I don't understand the toxicity. I mean, just take it for what it is. If you don't like it, go back and read, you know, the Thrawn trilogy from, I mean, it's still there. It exists, you know, it may, you know, and it never was canon. I'm sorry, but just, you know, it's, there's something for everybody. And I, you know, I'm hoping, like I said, I we're still watching Kenobi, and I hope that the last couple episodes kick butt. So
no doubt. Favorite band or artist you couldn't wait to introduce your kids to music wise? Like, was there an artist like, you got to listen to these guys? Like, did you have one?
Oh, okay. So I deliberately, much like in terms of movies and graphic novels and music, I've tried to not really imprint my loves on the kids when they were little. As they get older, they kind of see, well, ooh, what's that record? What's that? I mean, you can't see it, but there's a big thing. Oh yeah, you can. There's a big thing of CDs here. So they come in here and they're like, what's that? What's that? What's that? And they both, for whatever reason, very much like when I was a kid, I didn't like music so much when I was young. And then I came into my own as a teenager and I was just all about music. They've both discovered Metallica on their own. And I am the world's biggest Metallica fan. So now we talk about it. It's like, oh, you know, when they come here, we can go see them and we can do this and we can do that. So that's one thing I really kind of appreciate's the wrong word, but they have discovered it on their own. And now we can talk about it. And it's like, oh, you should see this. I've got this box set here and I've got this other box set over here and I've got all these rare B-sides over here. And so that's one thing now I'm so, you know, happy I can talk about. And then the other one is Star Wars. Star Wars, obviously, they saw the posters coming in here. And so we kind of go in a little bit too nerdy with it. We talk about why the writers probably made that choice, why the writers made this choice. We try to guess the ending. Like, for example, when the Book of Boba Fett came out, we were trying to figure out, why are they writing it this way? Why are they telling it in flashbacks this way, you know? And so now that they're older, we can get into these more in-depth conversations about that, which is fantastic. I absolutely love being able to do that.
Sounds very similar to our house as well. At the dinner table, we started talking about, like, whether it's, you know, MCU, Marvel, you know, Cinematic Universe, or just Marvel in general, or comic books, or Star Wars, or Harry Potter. So I love that, man. Describe the perfect family vacation. Where would it be?
Hawaii. Nice. I don't even have to blink. No, I grew up in Hawaii. They made me, for my editor and actually my two editors, they actually asked me to put a 4-page bio in this book. And I'm telling you, I am not that vain. But they said, no, it'll be a fun little thing. So I grew up in Hawaii and I would talk about it in the book. And yep. I would go every couple of years, but we haven't been in about 15 years. And I desperately want to get the kids out there, not only to show them the beauty of it. And because I just, that will always be home to me. But I also went to school out there. I would love to show them where I went to school. I'd love to do a classroom presentation with all the books that I've done. And have them see, this is how I existed in the 80s and this is what it was like. And so that would be my perfect family vacation.
Nice, man. Love that. Yeah, you know what? Don't like, they asked you to do it, but I love the insert, man. I love the Star Destroyer. I love the Thundercats logo in there. That's fantastic.
Yeah, we worked so hard on that too, because we were dancing the copyright issue. I'm like, well, how far can I go with this? I've seen authors put other characters in their books and they just didn't want to mess with it legally. So if you notice, everybody's kind of turned their backs to the camera and I'm in the foreground. And so that was just to save our butts with copyright. So hopefully we did it.
Well done, man. Speaking of like geek and all that other stuff, like, we'll just go with Star Wars. Favorite Star Wars character? Do you have one?
Yoda. I don't know why. Well, actually, I do know why. But, you know, he's the wise guy pushing little Luke out, you know, and he's trying to, you know, do reverse psychology, and he's got this ancient wisdom. And I have loved Yoda. I've loved his music since I was a little kid. It calms me every single time I hear it. I think I just saw some John Williams performance on YouTube where he was playing Yoda's theme in front of an audience, and I was like, it's just beautiful. I don't know if it gets any, well, he's got a bazillion beautiful themes, but for me, that one always just hits home.
Empire Strikes Back, to me, that soundtrack, not only Imperial March, not only, like, you know, of course the original score and all that and Yoda's theme, but Lando's palace, man, for some reason, like, that gets me, just like Yoda. It's just like, yep. and it's great in the beginning, and then, like, it has that eeriness to it, and it just it just goes with the movie. And of course, John Williams is the greatest, probably, composer, well, of our generation, right? So
yeah, it's gonna be a sad day when he leaves us, because there's just so much beautiful music. Like, we just saw Dominion yesterday or a couple days ago, and you know, I don't want to give it away, but all of the Jurassic World movies, they lean away from Williams' score, which I understand that, but there's just something about his touch on every movie. I mean, Spielberg wouldn't be Spielberg without John Williams. George Lucas, same thing. Williams is the 70s, 80s, 90s. I mean, there's just no doubt in my mind that the cinema would be completely different without him. And it's, I'm going to be very, very upset when he leaves us.
When he, when, you know, and obviously, you know, this is a diehard Star Wars fan like myself. The fact that they were like, the studio was like, wait, you don't want to use disco music? You want to use orchestra music? Like, what are you talking about?
Right. I mean, can you imagine? Can you imagine? I mean, you see the videos where they take Williams' score out on YouTube and they insert other things and you're like, oh, this is, oh no, this is not good. You know, I can't even imagine. I'm so glad that they used Williams for that. I mean,
man. Love it. And lastly, top three words you hope your kids would use to describe you as a dad, what would you want them to be?
Oh my gosh. Patient, loving, and handsome.
Nice. There you go. Love it. Great.
Because I've never been called handsome. I just want to hear it once.
Oh, you're handsome to me, sir.
Oh, thank you.
People, for more on Lucas, make sure you follow him on Twitter at Lucas Turnblue and pick up his books, Evil McEvil, wherever books are sold. And obviously you're everywhere on social media, right?
All over the place. I even have TikTok that I never use, but I'm there. And actually the TikTok, they want me to use it. So I will be on there doing something soon. So yeah, just at Lucas Turnblum, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, everywhere.
Very cool. People, thanks again for checking out the show. And Lucas, I really appreciate the time and I wish you and your family continued success, sir.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Art of Fatherhood podcast. Leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts and go to artoffatherhood.net.